But before we leave, Aaron, I kind of want to dive into something that may or may not have just leaked onto the Wizards Magic site.
Indeed. So this is going to be a separate... we kept the original cast is spoiler-free, as promised. This is a completely optional sub-episode that will be marked liberally with the word spoiler for people who are not interested in hearing about what happened. But I do think that it is out there. It wasn't... So the leak, for anybody that missed it, like 150 cards out of Dominaria got spoiled. Like somewhere between spoiled and leaked, basically there was some kind of internal miscommunication with one of the wizard sites, and they kind of dropped the ball. They released the release note article like 2 weeks early. And so now we have this information out there. Historically, we have not talked about things like this when they happen. In this particular instance, it is different, in my opinion, because it was an internal error. Like, it wasn't malicious. It wasn't stolen information. Nobody hacked anything or, you know, anything like that. It was just a flub. It's part of the world that we live in now. The information, it has been officially released, so we're not speculating about translations and what things say and what things do. So we can pretty comfortably talk about the stuff that was in
it. Yeah, so this is your warning. Everything after here is spoiler-based. If you want to turn out and you want to not hear spoilers, turn off your cast right now. So, fair warning.
All right. So, that said, man, we got some cards.
Definitely got some cards. I will say, too, that there's like 140 cards spoiled, and we still plan on doing a Dominaria show with like how these cards relate to Modern. Oh, so, yeah. We're going to go into a few of the cards that we just kind of ran through and picked out as cards that have a strong chance of making Modern. And we're going to discuss them. We're not going to go full in depth. We're not going to talk about how they changed the metagame 100%, but we're definitely going to go into some of these a little bit.
Yeah. And it is also, to me, very telling about how strong and interesting this set is going to be, in the sense that we have 142 cards and there is still a ton. Like, that's 50% of the set. And there is a ton of stuff that is just fascinating that's in here. I assume that the other half is going to be equally or more dynamic and interesting. And, you know, I mean, they really, like, it is unfortunate that it happened this way, but the set looks
dude, this set is incredible, man. This is the most interesting, kind of crazy set since I think Kaladesh. And Kaladesh was on a whole level of messed up, so this...
Right. Well, this is basically Time Spiral 2.
Yeah, I mean...
Time Spiral was...
Time Spiral was one of the best sets ever. This, obviously, we don't know the whole set, so it's hard to kind of speculate as to the full set strength, but... From what we're seeing, there's a ton of crazy stuff happening. We've got new card types. We've got returning favorite mechanics.
Like Kicker is back. The big theme is sort of like Legendary Matters. Unfortunately, the last Legendary Matters set that we had was Kamigawa. We know how that went. That said, the implementation in this set seems much better.
Well, Kamigawa was bad in the sense that it just had bad cards in it. Like, they just weren't powerful. They weren't that interesting. I guess they were interesting, but they weren't powerful. It's a very watered-down set. And this does not appear to be that way. This looks like it has some very powerful cards in it.
Yes. Lots of callbacks, like a lot of kind of fan service stuff. You know, they're talk about Chainer, which is sweet, like, to me.
Oh, the flavor in this set is unparalleled, man. This is going to be one of the best flavor slash Vorthos sets we've seen in years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and we sort of talked about this when it came out. It feels like Commander in Standard.
Yep, that was my initial thought, was like, there's Legends everywhere, it's Commander, yeah.
So that said, of the 140 cards, we picked out like five.
I think it was 10.
Or so.
It's 10.
Five-ish. Yep. That's 10. Okay, so we picked out 10 cards that are... that catch the eye. Why don't you bring us into the first one, and we will talk about how this is now like a required sideboard card.
Yeah, so the first one to me, I think this is just the card that every modern player needs to keep in mind, is called Damping Sphere. And what Damping Sphere does is it's a 2-mana artifact that says if a land would tap for more than 1 mana, it taps for colorless instead. So it replaces, essentially in this case, Tron lands, but it can also make Eldrazi Temple tap for 1. I think if you like put an Abundant Growth on a forest, maybe, or I don't know, Abundant Growth, Overgrowth, I think is the one that makes it.
Well, it turns off Utopia
Sprawl. Does Utopia Sprawl turn off? I thought Utopia Sprawl added a mana when the land was tapped. I think it's Overgrowth is the card I'm talking about. But the point is, it turns down lands, but then it has another set of text. It turns down Tron lands, basically. It's Tron hate, but it has an additional set of text that says each spell a player casts costs one more to cast for each other spell that player casts this turn. So it's like, if you cast Serum Visions cost blue, and then if you cast Sleight of Hand, now Sleight of Hand costs blue and 1, so it costs 2 now. And then if you wanted to go Pyretic Ritual costs red and 3. So it's like, it is impossible to storm with this in play. You can storm for 3, maybe, if you get lucky. So it's like, this just hoses Storm. Storm is not beating this card. It is good against Tron. It is very good against Tron. Obviously, turning off their whole Tron aspect is good, but it has a lot of the same Blood Moon type scenarios going on, where it's like, you turn off their Tron lands, but they're still going to get to 7 mana and cast their Karn. It doesn't stop that.
Right.
So, you know, against Tron, you still need a clock, you still need a way to end the game effectively, but it is good against Tron. It's definitely a card I would be happy to have in my sideboard in Modern.
Right. So the Blood Moon parallel is interesting also because it doesn't turn off their other lands. So like Red Green Tron and Red Green Eldrazi, like I guess Red Green Eldrazi more specifically, but also it is Tron for Tron players that play Thought Not Seer or Reality Smasher, which I guess is non-zero but not prevalent. The land does produce the colorless mana that is required to cast Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher. So that's something that you need to take into account when you bring this in against, say, Eldrazi. You're not cutting them off of colorless mana in the same way that Blood Moon
does. It's not a stone cold I win card, but the fact that it costs 2 mana makes me very interested in it. It's like Blood Moon on the draw against Tron is often not good enough. Like if they just play a turn 3 Karn, like you can cast your Blood Moon, but you're not winning that game. But Damping Sphere coming down on your turn 2 is just super relevant. It's exactly what you need. I think this card is going to have kind of sweeping effects on the modern format. What it does, I don't. We'll see. We'll see if it's actually as good as we think it is. But at the very least, it's going to force Tron and Storm players to, you know, up their Abrades and or Nature's Claim. So,
yep, indeed. There is a new Mox, and I have a lot of feelings about this card. I believe it is both better and worse than I think it is. I think that in certain decks that are red, white, or green that are interested in fast mana, with a pretty small deck building concession, you can easily turn this, or not easily, you can turn this into Mountain, Zergo Bellstriker, Mox Amber.
Well, read what the card does first, man.
Sure. Sorry. Mox Amber costs zero. It is a legendary artifact, and it has tap, add one mana of any color among legendary creatures and planeswalkers you control. So, for aggressive decks, for decks where this is really going to matter, I would look at the stuff that the legendary creatures that are one mana, which is of which there are nine, I believe. They are all red, white, or green. Some of them are both. Let me get the list.
Yeah, with one, it goes great. There's like two white one mana legendaries. I think red only has one. I think it's just Zergo, to my knowledge. Yeah, there's more.
Okay, so it's Isamaru, Hound of Kanda, Kytheon, Micaeus the Lunar.
That's not really a one mana one.
Which I guess is not a one mana. Norn the Wary seems weak. Reese the Redeemed, Ovaya Pashiri, Sage Lifecrafter from
Kaladesh. Okay, Green's got two.
And Zergo Bellstriker. So, of those, the ones that I think are reasonably playable, Kytheon,
Isamaru, and Zergo.
Is Isamaru really playable?
Isamaru's not great, but like a one mana 2/2 is not horrible. Like you could play that card. Like the fact that it enables your Mox Amber makes it playable, I think.
Sure. So notably, Reese the Redeemed is green and white. It's green white hybrid, so we would let the Mox Amber tap for two different colors, which is also quite good. You know, what we've seen in the past is all fast mana, regardless of the restrictions, is abusable. You know, I mean, like, the fact that it's legendary is whatever. Like, Mox Opal is legendary, and it's still a format staple. Do I think that this is going to be a format staple? I don't think so. I think it is going to certainly increase the speed of certain decks like nut draws to the point where they're going to be fairly consistent turn three kills.
Look, I'm with you on that. It speeds up some decks, but it makes them play worse cards. So to me, if you're trying to play this card fair, like if you plan on using one drops and or like legendary two drops, stuff like that to like speed out an accelerated like linear beatdown strategy, I think this card is fine. It can be powerful in certain situations. It'll be really horrible in other ones. I don't think the card is necessarily broken there. I think it's very good, but it feels a lot like Simeon Spirit Guide to me. This one can tap for more than that, but again, I don't think it's going to break those decks in half. It's very restrictive. When you're trying to use it with like Planeswalkers, because it does have the Planeswalker text, this card feels very win more. It's like your Mox only works when you already have a Planeswalker in play. It's active. So I think, obviously, a Mox is powerful. I mean, they are, you know, part of the Power 9, the Restricted and Vintage. Just unconditional Moxen are ridiculous in Magic. They just shouldn't be. They're too powerful. So if you can make this that's very good. There is one place right now I'm very scared of this card. Ran down the list of legendaries, but you forgot the best two mana legendary ever printed, which is Grizzlebrand. So when you cast Goryeo's Vengeance and you reanimate your Grizzlebrand, that costs 2 mana, and then you put Grizzlebrand in play, and before you had to dig to Simeon Spirit Guides, well, now you can dig to Simeon Spirit Guide and Mox Amber, and then you can make black and red. It lets you, like, loot into more stuff. You can use it with your Rurik Thar. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I don't know if this changes that deck. I haven't fully looked into it, but it does scare me with Grizzlebrand, because I've been playing Legacy recently, and, you know, the card I really don't want them to draw with their draw 7 is Lotus Petal, generally.
Sure.
And this is a Lotus Petal in Modern for that deck. So, well, not necessarily Lotus Petal. It's definitely worse than Lotus Petal is in that deck in general, but it can have some of the same effects. So I think, right. I think this card's abusable. I think we're going to see it in Modern. It's definitely of a Modern power level, but I'm not convinced it's broken. I think there's going to be a lot of brewing with it, though, so it's definitely a notable card.
Sure. We got a new Karn, which was expected because he's in the art. He is a 4-mana legendary planeswalker. He has plus reveal the top 2 cards of your library. An opponent chooses one of them. Put that card into your hand and exile the other one with a silver counter on it. You can -1 him to put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. And his -2 is create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. They did clarify it counts itself, so it is always going to be a +1/+1. So bear that in mind. So he is... I think he's better than Jace.
The Mind Sculptor?
Yes.
No way. I don't even think it's close. No way. Hear
me out. Okay. Fate Seal is fine.
Yes.
Brainstorm is great. The fact that he draws you a card, actually, like, draws you a card and then draws you a card on layaway is great. The fact that he protects himself is something that many of the older planeswalkers, like, the deciding factor often for whether or not a planeswalker is playable is whether or not they can protect themselves, and he does that. Also, you are playing him undoubtedly in a deck that has a lot of artifacts, in Modern anyways. So his -2 might just get you a Gurmag Angler.
Look, I get what where you're coming from, and to me, he can be better than Jace in the sense that he's colorless, so he goes in a lot of places. Whereas, like he gives red, like, a good option for card draw. He gives white, like, a good option for card draw. Like, these colors didn't have. But saying he, like, strictly, like, on a cost-to-cost basis is better than Jace the Mind Sculptor, I think, is ridiculous. Jace is, I think, much more powerful than this card. My problem with it is that the plus is, like, it says +1 draw a bad card, right? Which I don't like, because it's not necessarily a bad card, but it's, like, look at the top two, you get the worst of those two. It's like late game, if you're plussing, you're probably getting a land that you don't need. Early game, they might be giving you a spell. I don't know. Giving your opponent a decision is always bad, right? And it's always worse than it looks on the card text, I guess. The -1 negates this to some extent. But it's like, if you're digging for a certain card, it's like it takes 2 turns to get it. So, like, you need to already be kind of ahead for it to really be doing what you want it to do. It's like, again, like any planes, like, any planeswalker that sees play in Modern, like, if you play it and you're ahead, you're probably going to win anyway.
Sure.
I think the -2 is the best mode. The -2, I think, is absurd. I think the -2 could be really, really broken. Like, if you play this in Affinity, and it's just, like, 4 mana, I get a 3 loyalty planeswalker, that also made like an 8-8 is ridiculous. Like, so in that spot, I think it's like really, really good. Like, I think this card just slots into Affinity right away and like could make Affinity into the best deck in Modern again, like really quick. This card's really, really good with Mox Opal. Casting ahead of time makes it a lot better. I also think it's going to be like very played in white decks that need card advantage. It could be a sideboard card in Burn, although I don't think that's super likely. And
if you really wanted this effect in Burn, you would just play Chandra Pyromancer.
Sure, or Chandra Torch of Defiance. Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
So I think it's very like a lot less likely there. But it is an option that they have. Obviously, they can cast it. It's colorless. But Eldrazi Tron and just normal Tron, especially post-board. I can see this coming out of their board often, where now you're trying to fight through hate. It's like kind of unrealistic that you're always going to be able to cast, you know, Ulamog and Ugin. And, you know, even like All Is Dust, those types of cards. But it helps you get there by just kind of, you know, putting something that delays on the table, something that is a threat. Like the -2 is a threat. It stacks really well with itself, where it's like, even with no artifacts in play, it's like if you just like play it under an empty board, you know, -2 make a 1/1. Okay. -2, now you have 2/2/2s. Okay. Well, now you got a plus, you get a card. -2 again, you lose your Karn, but now you have 3/3/3s. Like, that's a lot of power out of a 4-mana thing. So, I think the card is very good. I don't think it's quite Jace level, but it is definitely in the pantheon of 4-mana Planeswalkers that are playable in Modern. And that is a small club. There are few. There's like three. Yes.
This is a very small, yeah, very small club. Actually, one thing that I did, and it sort of is relevant to this. The Mox Amber is what it's called. Does not tap for colorless mana.
If you have Mox Amber
and a Karn Scion of Urza, it does nothing because colorless is not a color, and it specifically says tap for a mana of
any color. That's very relevant. I mean, it doesn't work in Eldrazi Tron, so that's good to know.
If you were on board for that reason, somehow that does not happen. Like, it's not Chrome Mox.
Okay.
Cause Chrome Mox is stupid.
It's fair.
All right. Moving on to the lady who started it all. Kind of. The original Pyromancer. Jai Ballard has a Planeswalker card.
Woo. Heck yeah.
Jai Ballard is 2 red, red, red. It's a lot of red, which we will come back to. But it's really, she really costs 2 mana, kind of. So she's 2 red, red, red. Her plus is add red, red, red. Spend this mana only to cast instant or sorcery spells. Seems fine. She has another plus, different plus one, which is discard up to 3 cards, then draw that many cards, which is fantastic. And her -8 is you get an emblem with you may cast instant and sorcery cards from your graveyard. If a card cast this way, it would be put in your graveyard, exile it instead. So did you just get like permanent Past in Flames?
Yeah, that pretty, I mean, it's slow, but you're going to win any game when you -8 generally.
Right. So I don't think that there is an immediate home for her except in Scred.
This card is great with Ensnaring Bridge. It's not great, but it's good with Ensnaring Bridge.
It is good with Ensnaring Bridge. The card that I actually really, really like this with in like a Scred-esque build where you're heavy on like mono red, but also heavy on like red permanence, is Fanatic of Mogus.
Sure.
For those who may not remember, Fanatic of Mogus is 3 and a red for a 4/2 Minotaur Shaman. Look at those stats, baby. 4/2 for 4. Delicious. when Fanatic of Mogus enters the battlefield, it deals damage to each opponent equal to your devotion to red, which for those non-Theros players is each red mana symbol in the mana cost of permanents you control count towards your devotion to red. So it's always going to hit for one. If you were to, for some reason, play it on an empty board. But it is a very sort of reasonable situation in a deck like Skred, where you're playing Koth, you're playing Chandra Torch of Defiance, you play this as your top end, and then Fanatic of Mogus comes in as like your haymaker, because it's untargeted damage that gets around Leyline, and a lot of it, right? Like, just, let's say conservatively, you have like Koth, a Blood Moon, a Chandra Torch of Defiance, and Jaya. So that's three for Jaya, two for Koth, two for Chandra, one for the Blood Moon, and then one for the Fanatic of Mogus. Like, seven you to the dome for four mana seems like a great way to finish out a game.
Yeah, I mean, that'll get them.
You know, and also, like, it leaves a body behind. Like, no, that's not nothing. Like, four powers is
no, you've got something. A 4/2. I mean, that's relevant. The home I thought of for Jaya Ballard when I looked at this card was, I think this is, could be like an actually powerful sideboard card out of Storm sideboards. I'm not sure if it's right, but it does a lot of the things Storm is doing already, right? Where it's like the emblem is basically passed in flames, so like you're kind of interested in that. Like, if you got the emblem in Storm, you probably win. I don't think you generally would get there, but the text is on there, so it's worth discussing. Discard up to three cards and then draw that many cards in Storm is ridiculous. It's like draw six sometimes. It's like if you're like discarding your Past in Flames and like a ritual and like a cantrip and then drawing three cards, it's like you can now Past in Flames back the stuff you discarded. Like, it's super good there. And then obviously adding three mana is great in Storm. So kind of does all the stuff you want. You can accelerate it out with rituals. You could be like, you know, turn two, ritual, 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 Jaya, which not as good. But you also have creatures to protect her, like against, you know, small decks. You have a Brawl out, so...
Yeah, well, and the fact that if you did have a Brawl out, and let's say you were just missing, like, you had rituals, but you didn't have
Metamorphos. You didn't have your gifts or whatever. Like,
yeah, like, you could certainly, I could see a world in which Brawl, like, one mana, like, Dark Ritual, basically, Dark Ritual into Jaya is a reasonable line of play. And then you plus... dump the trash in your hand, hope to draw into Metamorphos or gifts, and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, she, like, I don't think she necessarily will do that, but she could, and she could just replace pieces of the puzzle. She might be better than that effect. We don't know. But she is a powerful card, so, you know, it's something Storm will probably try. Also, just anytime you see discard three cards, then draw that many, like, Dredge could consider this. That one seems a lot less likely to me, but it is something they could consider.
I mean, I see that, like, this with Bedlam Reveler
seems really good. This could, like, actually see this definitely work in a Bedlam Reveler deck. That's a good home for it, too.
You know, because that's just, like, insane value, right? Like, you Bedlam Reveler, draw three cards, and then if the cards aren't good, you just plus her, discard them, and
Look for the next Bedlam Reveler. I mean, that's what that deck does. Yeah, this could go there. I don't know. So Jaya's interesting. Like, it's not like a slam dunk. Like, this isn't like a 10 out of 10 busted Planeswalker in the sense that like Jace the Mind Sculptor or maybe Karn was, but it definitely has homes where it could exist. Before you go there, before you go to the next one, we need to talk about my favorite Planeswalker on the set that I think you might have skipped right over, but how are you going to leave out the blue Planeswalker, Aaron? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, no, I scrolled past him.
Yeah, we need to talk about Teferi, because this is a Planeswalker. This is a good one, man. Oh, I cannot wait to put Jace in play and then follow it up with a turn 5 Teferi. Oh, sounds so good.
Yep. Yeah, you tap out on 4, and then tap out on 5.
Well, you don't necessarily tap out. All right, so let me read the card, because I love this card. It is 3...
It is the kind of card that you would love.
Planeswalker so much. I can tell you I'm going to play a lot of this in Standard, but side the point. True. All right, so 3 white, blue, 5 mana. For a legendary planeswalker, fairy, starting loyalty of 4. It has a plus 1, says draw a card, and then at the beginning of the next end step, untap up to 2 lands. So the general play pattern with this card is pay 5 mana, play it, plus it up to 5 loyalty, then you draw a card, and you untap 2 lands. So it's like on turn 5, you're going to... It's like a 3 mana planeswalker that lets you leave up 2 lands and has 5 loyalty and drew a card, which is awesome. That's very strong right there, because then, you know, you could leave up like a Path to Exile and a Spell Pierce or something. You could leave up some number of spells to protect it, which is kind of how it protects itself. But it also has a mode that is minus 3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's library third from the top. So it ousts a permanent. They don't gain life, it just puts it there. So basically like a commit to memory, but it goes a card deeper. Putting any permanent into its owner's library is awesome. Like, Teferi can take an opposing planeswalker and put it in their library. That's really strong. It lets you deal with stuff. If they have, like, a fetch land in play, or if you know they have, like, a fetch land in their hand, it's really awkward if they want to fetch, like, fetch away that card. So, it's kind of like exile-based removal. It's, you know, kind of on that level of strength for minus 3, but it also answers enchantments, it answers artifacts, you know, you can get rid of that cranial plating you need to deal with, it answers Karns, it answers Wyrmcoil engines. Like, his minus 3 is very, very strong. And it should be. I mean, it's a 5 mana planeswalker, but that's a very strong ability. And then it has the ultimate of minus 8, you get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent opponent controls, so probably win the game. I don't know. It seems hard to lose when you have that, but doesn't, like, obviously any planeswalker ultimate's going to be good, so it's kind of like flavor text. But yeah, when you get to the minus 8, you're probably going to win. So basically, sure. It's a card draw engine that can generate mana. Like, the plus 1 draw card and then untap lands is so good in blue decks. It's like you can play the thing you want to play, you know, you progress your resource advantage plan by drawing cards, and then you get to untap and hold up your counter spells, which is just exactly what blue wants to do.
Sure. Okay, so here's where I could see this being extra strong. And that is Field of Ruin. Because if you're only playing blue white, chances are you're already playing Field of Ruin, because it's very easy in a two color deck. But the shuffle effect from, like, the search shuffle effect from Field of Ruin is not optional. So you can oust their whatever, hold up mana leak whatever they play, and then untap Field of Ruin away, like, shuffle away the thing that they had, and, you know, potentially strip mine them.
Yeah, no.
You know, you're still up. I mean, that's, like, that to me is his ceiling, right? Like, that is where he really...
I mean, you're going to definitely play him with Field of Ruin. Really be there. You're definitely going to do that, and I think that's very relevant. I think that's super strong. It's, like, something the card is very interested in, so... Like, minus 3 exile target permanent is absurd. Obviously, it doesn't do exactly that, but that's good. Like, that's like a Karn on a 5-mana thing, which is good. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. I think the card's great. I don't know. I think we were talking, and it was like, there are not very many 5-mana planeswalkers in Modern at all. In fact, we only could come up with one that sees any play at all, which was Gideon Jura. Yep.
Gideon Jura.
I guess Obnixilus saw... very small amount of Modern play. Doesn't really, but sometimes like a black green deck has one or whatever, but
he sees like sideboard play in some of the slower black control decks.
I mean, you don't really see Obnixilus, like, but you might see him here and there, but it does seem like Teferi and Jaya might immediately get played in Modern, so that is cool. That would be really cool if that happened.
Yes. There's a new toy for Dredge, by which I mean there's a new Squee the Immortal. He's one red for a legendary creature goblin, 2/1. You may cast Squee the Immortal from your graveyard or from exile. So this is pretty much a free roll prized amalgam triggerer. I don't know that you pull out, like, I don't think you play four of them, but I think playing one is pretty free and playing two is not unreasonable. Just because you can always cast it from the graveyard.
Scred Red could be interested in this. It's a pretty straightforward card. It's not very good on stats, but the fact that it just, you can never get rid of this 2-1 essentially. Good. I mean, it gets stonewalled a lot. It's going to have a hard time with Tarmogoyfs, but outside of that, it's definitely, the effect is interesting and powerful enough that modern decks will be interested in it.
All right. Wizard's Retort.
I think
there are.
I kind of want to take this one. This is my baby.
This is your card.
No, so this is just cancel. It has the text of cancel. It's one blue counter target spell. But it has some additional text that says this spell costs one less to cast if you control a wizard.
Are there any good blue wizards in modern?
Yeah, there's one in particular that sees quite a bit of play. And it also happens to be pretty good with this card. So the card we're referring to is Snapcaster Mage, obviously. Probably the best creature in modern. It's up there. If it's not the best, it's definitely in the top two or three creatures in modern.
It's pretty close.
I would say it's the best, but I'm probably a little biased, so I don't want to. But whatever.
Strong agree.
Strong agree that I'm biased towards blue. All right, fair.
Yes.
But so anyway, Wizard's Retort. I don't think cancel is good enough for modern. That card doesn't see any play. If cancel was good enough, disallow would see play. Disallow has seen like one of play in blue white decks sometimes, and disallow is much better than that. But blue counter target spell is playable in modern. A lot of people play Logic Knot, which it, like, aspires to be that a lot of the time. So if you were playing like a Delver, Young Pyromancer, Snapcaster Mage deck, something like that, this card is very, very strong.
Yes.
There are a lot of cards that are incidentally wizards. I think maybe Young Pyromancer is not a wizard, but...
Well, Young Pyromancer is a shaman.
Yeah, I think Tassiger looks like a wizard, but is also a shaman. But Vendilion Click is a wizard, so this goes good with that. Yeah, I mean, there's some random wizards.
Weirdly, the front side of Delver, but not the back side.
Yeah, so before it flips, you can get him, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you can protect him when he didn't flip. Yeah, so, again, this isn't, like, modern. This isn't, like, going to break modern, but this card is at a power level, and it plays well enough with Snapcaster Mage that it is something you would consider. So, just wanted to mention it.
Yes. Agree. Longtime listeners will remember when Goblin Piledriver got moved into Modern, I was very excited. Because it was a card from an old set that I have a lot of affection for. It has a cool effect. It is not overly powerful. And what I said at the time was that it signaled a willingness on the part of Wizards to bring cards from older sets into the modern format through Standard. And this card is exactly that. They are reprinting Goblin War Chief for the first time in modern. Goblin War Chief was originally printed in Scourge way back in 2003. So this card can like get a learner's permit. But it is one red for a Goblin Warrior. It is a 2/2. Goblin spells you cast cost one less to cast, and goblin creatures you control have haste. So it's kind of like this weird kind of middle ground between Goblin Chieftain and like Frog Tosser Banneret, which is the other one. It has effects from both. The thing, and obviously, like, if you just listened to the previous episode, we talked a lot about goblins because I'm like back on the horse. The goblin spells also reduces the cost of things like Warren Weirding. So this guy with Warren Weirding as a one mana edict, that doesn't like Frog Tosser Banneret. The reason that I don't think it is playable necessarily is because that it's all it does. This also gives all of your creatures haste, which is very relevant in this deck. So I think this becomes a playable version of Frog Tosser Banneret. And I'm just unbelievably excited to have this deck or this card to put into Goblins. Like I said, do I think it's a four of? No. Do I think it has a spot?
Dude, absolutely. It could be a four of. This is a powerful card. It makes Warren Weirding.
Sure.
What it's missing is like a good card advantage card. Like once Goblins get a good card advantage card, then this card's going to be like a lot better. But even until then, I mean, this card is powerful. It's a good card.
Yes. Yep. It absolutely does. It sees play in Legacy Goblins. But like Warren Instigator also sees play in Legacy Goblins because it's just better. Oh man, I didn't even think of that. Warren Instigator with Goblin King with Mountain Walk. That seems
good. That is worth trying, actually.
Huh. All right. Mental note, pick up some Warren Instigators. Okay. But yeah, so I'm really excited. It also obviously means that there are going to be a lot of Goblins in Standard. And historically, when I have played Standard, it has been with Goblins. You know, like I played this blue-red Goblin artifact deck in M15 Standard and like had a lot of fun with it. So I'm odds on to play Goblins in the upcoming Standard. And I will be very happy.
Warchief will certainly be a big part of that. Reducing mana costs is powerful, so.
As are ridiculous bounce effects and the like.
True. So next card, Merfolk Trickster. It's blue for a 2/2 with flash. It's a Merfolk Wizard. It says when Merfolk Trickster enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls. It loses all abilities until end of turn.
The fact that it comes stock with flash and you don't have to like juke it with Aether Vial like Harbinger of the Tides makes this card very interesting to me.
Tapping a creature is great. This is going to be really good in Merfolk. It's just like a tempo-y card. It's sweet that they lose all abilities. So like, you know, Merfolk has traditionally had a kind of a hard time with Storm. You know, turning off a Brawl is pretty nice. You know, you can turn off a Wyrmcoil Engine, just, you know, make it into a 6/6, which still might be a problem for you, but at least like you can attack into it now. You know, you can like kind of suicide attack and deal damage, whereas before like the lifelink just made that not even an option. And it taps it too. So like you can just attack past the Wyrmcoil Engine. You know, it offers Merfolk traditionally has had a hard time interacting with the board, and it plays Harbinger of Tides, just to kind of get anything, but like it would often play, you know, Path to Exile, Dismember, sometimes Lightning Bolt, although generally not as much, but
yeah, it plays a lot.
Mostly Dismember, yeah. Sometimes Gutshot, stuff like that, but
it's not
great in the deck. You know, a lot of Vapor Snag too, but it's like it would rather have a body, especially like a tribal body that lets it, you know, get pumped up. So it's good there. I could see it in blue, like a blue red tempo deck. It's kind of nice with Lightning Bolt that you can, you know, maybe kill something that has Undying or something, but. Probably not as much there, but definitely just a card Merfolk is going to want to play. So for that reason, it's on the Modern radar.
Okay. Before we get to the last card, I want to give it an honorable mention to Relentless Rats version 2.0. There is a card called Rat Colony. It is one in a black for a rat. It gets +1/+0 for each other rat you control, and a deck can contain any number of cards named Rat Colony. So if you can now curve out with rats, you can curve Ravenous Rats into Rat Colony, into Relentless Rats, and then lose the game. But
you can this card makes Pack Rat a lot more playable.
I don't think All right, so. Fair. I think Pack Rat is as playable as it's going to be currently, unless they print like a black Training Grounds-esque enchantment that's like competitively costed. But, and which is not to say that it isn't playable. I have registered Pack Rats in many competitive events with great glee, and it has won many games for me. So I don't have a problem with Pack Rat as a level, having its current level of playability. But the any number of cards named Rat Colony is interesting. It also opens up like a bunch of like stupid combo deck options where like you can just run a ton of these and then run Surgical and like discard one, then Surgical basically like your entire deck except for four or five combo pieces, and then
build your own Doomsday.
Pretty much. I mean, it's not a good Doomsday, but it's a Doomsday.
But all right.
But so the real card of this sort of ilk that I wanted to talk about is called Dark Bargain. It is 3 and a black for an instant. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put 2 of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard, and Dark Bargain deals 2 damage to you. Good instant speed card selection and card draw is pretty rare. It's pretty rare in black. The fact that you, like, oftentimes putting a card in your graveyard in a black deck is just drawing a card. So it's basically 4 mana draw 3 that only does 2 damage to you. I can see this card being playable in, like, I'm interested in it in sort of like black mid-range control decks that are looking for something that they can hold up if their opponent doesn't do something that they need to interact with at sorcery speed. And in those kinds of decks, that happens a lot. Sure. So I'm interested in this particular effect. There are certainly times when if you cast it, like your opponent's turn 4 end step, you cast this, then a Bloodghast, and then like untap, play a land, get back your Bloodghast, and then you've got just like handful of gas. Like that's very interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's what it is. 4 mana instant speed card draw. You know, grindy decks will be interested in it. I think it's good. It's a good card.
I don't feel like you're excited about it.
I mean, I think the lose 2 life is definitely pretty costly in a format that, you know, has burn deck that's very good and plays shocklands. So I'm not super interested in it. I think I'm more interested in it in standard. I think it's awesome with the card Torrential Gearhulk. But like, if you wanted to do a blue black deck with Torrential Gearhulk, then I mean that could be modern powerful. So we'll see.
Sure. So we do have a bonus Spice Rack card, because this is a Legendary Matters set. There's going to be legendary creatures of all shapes and sizes running around like crazy. A long time ago on Magic Online, I played against a person, and the deck that they played was basically like a legendary creatures deck that I believe, if I recall correctly, was black and red. And it had like Zergo Bellstriker, Tassiger, like those kinds of cards alongside Hero's Blade. And Hero's Blade is kind of an interesting thing. So it's 2 mana for an equipment. Equip creature gets +3/+2. It's equip 4, but Whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach Hero's Blade to it for free. At instant speed, by the way. So, like, that's tangentially relevant, potentially. So you can, for example, like, play Zergo Bellstriker on one. He's legendary. He's 2/2. And then turn two, plays Hero's Blade. It automatically gets equipped to him. And then you swing five on turn two. Very good. You play, you know, you have this on the board and you play one mana Tassigar. And now your Tassigar is a 7/6. Right? He's a 4/5. No, he's a 7/7. There we go. 7/7 Tassigar turns out pretty great. It is also weirdly, even though it interacts with legendary creatures, it in and of itself is not legendary. So you can just like Voltron somebody up with this, which is feels like an oversight, but whatever, it is what it is. So yeah, this was an uncommon from Fate Reforged. But you know, I don't know, go throw 30 cents at it. Like a lot of bad cards that interact with legendary are getting like bought and sold right now. This is one that I think is actually playable that is probably still 10 cents and worth adding to your collection for just such an occasion.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Could be broken.
Could be broken. So yeah, I'm pretty ready to wrap up the mini episode. And, so unless there is anything else, I will talk to everybody later.
All right. We'll see you guys for real this time.